You're listening to another episode of The Zag. Eric Rousseau here, excited to be joined by Shane Phillips, 2017 NLC LA Fellow, our go-to expert in all things mobility and transportation, all kind of stuff. A lot of that in the news right now, so we're excited to have him on. So let's get to it. All right, Shane, I mentioned you're our expert on a couple things, but I also wanted to start with asking you about how your home renovations are going. I always see those on Facebook and the different adventures you're undertaking. Can you give folks the update on where you are so far?
Sure. Well, thank you for having me on. And yeah, I bought my first home just a couple of years ago, and it's an older home, you know, the most anyone as a first home in LA could ever hope for. And when I first moved in, I had kind of in my head the idea I would like to kind of learn how to do a little more DIY stuff, home renovation things. Didn't really have anything in particular in mind. But in one of the rooms, I started to pull off some of the trim or baseboard or whatever you want to call it. And it turned out it was basically like embedded in the wall. It's like lath and plaster, old style of wall, like pre-drywall. And it started damaging the wall itself. And then I was like, well, I guess I will just pull the wall off and redo everything. And that spiraled into not just the wall, but then the floor and then the ceiling. And at a certain point, I had nothing but the studs and the joists and the floor on the bottom, the baseboards, and just kind of learned step by step how to, you know, rewire things, insulate everything, bought a drywall lift, bought many saws and various other tools. And I've been there 2 years and I've finished about 1.5 rooms. So it's been a very slow process, but I have learned a lot. And I have, like I said, I probably have about a dozen saws now and another, I have a stove that is just a big pile of tools. But it's fun. It's, well, no, it's not fun, but it is satisfying.
All right. Well, I'm glad you still have 10 fingers. And I guess that's why you have a 30-year mortgage in theory, so you can get to all the rooms over the course of time.
It might take that long.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, let's talk about housing a little bit. So you're our expert on many things, including why it's so challenging for folks to buy a home at all or even rent comfortably in LA. And the big topic that's driving a lot of this conversation right now is a state bill called SB 50. When someone who might not know what it is asks you what the deal is with SB 50, what's your short answer to that?
Well, I guess I would say that it is basically a way to allow for more housing where we need it most and where we want it most, which is near transit. Cities for many decades at this point have made it increasingly difficult to build housing really anywhere. And a lot of rules in place make it actually even harder to build it and kind of infill already built up areas where we want to see housing most, because that's where the transit is. That's where the jobs are. And so this is basically saying, you know, cities, you haven't been doing your job and we don't see you changing that anytime soon. And so as a state, we're going to kind of set some minimum standards for you for what you need to allow to be built in certain parts of your city where transit access is highest and also where jobs are most concentrated. And in some cases where you have especially wealthy and historically exclusionary communities, we're going to change the rules to allow more housing in those places.
And so as folks can probably imagine, this has made people very angry in a lot of ways and people excited in a lot of ways. When folks are saying this is the wrong bill to back and the wrong route to go, what are some of the more frequent criticisms of the bill that you hear that make you the most frustrated?
Well, I wouldn't say all of these make me frustrated. I would say there's two strains of opposition. Mm-hmm. One is more kind of the classical NIMBY, not in my backyard, which is really just, you know, I don't want bigger buildings in my neighborhood. I don't want more people and more cars and more traffic and those kinds of things. All of which, you know, is understandable to an extent. I get it. But also cities are not, you know, frozen in amber, and they do need to evolve over time and respond to, you know, differing conditions. And the fact that, you know, especially with climate change facing us down, the fact that we need to put housing where it is most sustainable, and that is near transit, in places where people can walk, bike, and take transit to more of their trips, where they live nearer to their jobs and other daily destinations. So that's kind of one group. They're the group that I have less sympathy for, honestly. The other kind of major strain of opposition, or at least concern, is from community-based organizations and equity organizations and things like that, where their real concern is, you know, A, does housing, more housing in general, given how expensive it is to build and how much it costs to rent or buy new housing, is this really going to help people who are most in need of assistance, people, you know, at the lower end of the income spectrum? And, you know, even when you're providing 10 or 15% of the units as affordable, is the, you know, signal being sent by that new development to other potential developers, to landlords in the area and other folks, is that outweighing the benefit of providing more housing? Because the idea overall is that more housing is necessary to moderate prices. I guess I should have stated that up front, but really the idea underlying all of this is that for 30 plus years, California and Los Angeles is included in that, has built far less housing than we used to in decades past, even though we're a larger state and city in terms of population. And that's created a level of scarcity where you have a lot more people who want to live here than can. And the people who own the property already have a lot of leverage in the negotiations over rent. So, you know, if a landlord is looking for tenants and the vacancy rate is very low, they can take their pick of who they want, who can pay the most. In places like Dallas and Phoenix and other cities that have built more in proportion to their population growth, that's less of an issue. And they've managed to keep their housing prices relatively stable in comparison. So long way of saying it's kind of classic NIMBYs and then more genuinely equity-minded folks. And, you know, I think the thing that I always want to respond to is the people who are genuinely concerned with equity and figure out how we can get the kind of supply side just needing more housing and pair that with the other aspects of this that are really necessary to help people at the low end of the spectrum who, frankly, will never directly or at least certainly not directly and even maybe not even indirectly benefit from new housing at the higher end.
So do you think SB 50 passes? Do you think it gets watered down and passes? What's your best guess on what happens?
I really don't know. It looks, things are going well. I think someone shared recently that of the committees that it has gone through in the Senate so far, it's been voted on twice and passed pretty overwhelmingly in both committees. So between the votes in favor in those committees and the co-authors, of which this bill has quite a few, 15 of the 40 senators have already voted yes on this, or their co-authors. So presumably that means they are going to vote yes on it. Mm-hmm. That's not necessarily representative because oftentimes senators and other politicians at the state they'll vote it in the committee to kind of move it forward, but it doesn't necessarily represent a vote of support overall. They just want to see the conversation continue and kind of see where it goes. But I think it's looking very good. It's a very different conversation from the one that was happening last year with SB 827, which was the predecessor to this bill, which failed in its first committee and had almost immediate opposition from community-based organizations and equity organizations that this year, most of them, you know, not many of them have come out with like full-throated support, but they are saying, you know, we're open to this. We want to keep working on it. We think there's an opportunity for this to really work for everyone.
Yeah. When we come back, I want to ask a few more questions about how to engage in conversations about housing in LA. We're talking to Shane Phillips, the 2017 fellow. Thanks for listening to The Zag. We'll be right back. Yeah, I think as a progressive who's on a neighborhood council, and I know there's other NLC alums who are on neighborhood councils too, who run up against these issues of wanting to add more housing and then constantly getting shouted down, What do you feel like is the most successful way to engage in a conversation with folks who are opposed either on the NIMBY side or on the equity side to make a case that there's a lot of potential benefits to a bill like SB 50, or at least thinking more like SB 50 wants us to think?
Well, on the NIMBY side, obviously, because their opposition is kind of rooted in just not wanting things to change, it's obviously harder to convince them. And I don't think you necessarily will or always can. And maybe that shouldn't be the goal. But I think when you have conversations with them, you know, I hear that talking about their children and future generations of their own families, like, will they be able to live here? I think that does really work with some people. Not all of them, certainly. I've heard people say, you know, I'm sorry, my kids won't be able to live here, and that's fine. And that seems terrible, but
great, thanks.
That's the perspective that some people take. But I think, you know, that is one thing. And I think recognizing that, you know, I don't have the numbers off the top of my head here, but in a given year, just take Los Angeles as an example. If we grow by 50,000 people, probably, well, let me rephrase that. This last year, we had about 220,000 births and about 100,000 deaths, or 120,000 or something like that. So we had a net kind of natural increase, completely ignoring migration and immigration and all these things, of around 100,000 people. And we grew by about 50,000 people in that same amount of time. And so, you know, if you look at that, that means we're forcing people out. A lot of the people that are born here are not able to stay. Just physically is not possible because we're not providing enough housing, even for them, before we account for domestic and international migration. So I think that's also an important thing. You know, I think the sustainability argument is also important. I always point out kind of the fact that not building housing doesn't mean that those people don't exist. It just means that the housing will need to be built elsewhere. And in, you know, the way that this all works is, if it's going to be built elsewhere, it is almost certainly going to be built somewhere that is less environmentally sustainable and where the residents are going to emit more carbon emissions per capita. So if we don't build that unit in Los Angeles, there's a very good chance it's going to end up as a single family home in the suburbs of Phoenix or Las Vegas or Houston or wherever. And that is going to have negative consequences for the environment. On the equity side, my focus, and I try to be very balanced on this, I focus a lot on supply argument because I think that is the argument that is in some ways the most counterintuitive. It's just not something people really think about all the time. And until maybe 5 or so years ago with the whole YIMBY movement, it really just wasn't, and YIMBY being yes in my backyard, it wasn't in the consciousness or the zeitgeist. And I think the Overton window has shifted on that. But as much as I am focused on it and think it's important and spend a lot of my time on it, I do always acknowledge that building more housing alone, especially market rate housing, which is quite expensive to build, will not serve everyone. And we need to do other things that also help people in the short run. Things like stronger tenant stability measures, and you know, there are a variety of ways to pursue that, as well as more funding for affordable housing, which, you know, the amount that we spend on housing in this country, for renters in particular, is just vanishingly small. We subsidize homeownership to the tune of $60 or $80 billion a year, and obviously homeowners are already in a stronger financial position than renters, and we spend maybe, I don't know, a third of that much on things like Section 8 housing choice vouchers and other forms of rental assistance. And that just seems totally backwards to me.
Last thing, what are you most optimistic about when it comes to housing in Los Angeles? Anything?
Ugh. I go back and forth. I will say, you know, SB 50, as the author Scott Wiener has said, is in many ways modeled off of a Los Angeles policy called the Transit-Oriented Communities Guidelines that came about as a result of Measure JJJ from a few years ago. I think it was in 2016 that was approved. And then a year later is when the TOC guidelines came in. And those have created a lot of housing, or a lot of housing permits and the beginning of a lot of construction. All of those buildings will include between about 10 and 20% of the units reserved for low-income households. And because, you know, the nature, the name, it says it, it's transit-oriented communities. So all of those projects are in areas that are more transit accessible, close to rail and high quality bus service. And so we're making progress. There's a long way to go. And I think, you know, why I'm such a big supporter of SB 50 is not even so much just how it will affect LA, because it will improve things in LA by opening up some of the more exclusionary and single family neighborhoods that have kept housing out. But even more importantly, because LA has at least been trying to do its part, it'll force the cities that haven't been trying to do their part, the places like Palo Alto and Beverly Hills and elsewhere, to really contribute to the solution, because it can't just be one or two cities doing all the work, because, you know, there's just not enough space for all of us, for us to do all of it. And, you know, there are a lot more places that people want to live.
Yeah, sounds good. Well, listen, thanks for coming on. And thanks, everyone, for listening to this episode of The Zag. You can catch all past episodes and all the places you get your podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher. They're all there. Check all the episodes out. There's over 125 or so of awesome progressives doing awesome things. Until next time, take care.